Now, as most people will be aware who cast an eye over the news, there's and continue to unfold at the moment a situation in the north of France related to the attacks carried out in Paris on, where are we now? It was on Wednesday, was it not? I've got Tony Gosling on the line. Tony, who is investigative radio journalist, broadcaster, and frankly a great man to call upon when one is perhaps concerned that there might be more to what we're being told by the media. And in this particular instance, I don't know about everybody else, but my head spins when I look at what's happening in Paris. Tony, help me out with this one.
Well, that's what they want, actually. This is, you know, the way the news media works nowadays is very, very centralised, and there's a tremendous amount that we're not being told. This is the trouble, isn't it? You know, I always recount the story, old Danish friend of mine said that on Danish television there was one of their presenters, you know, quite a sort of warm, friendly chap on TV, not like the ones we get, it seems. And he said at the end of the bulletin, he sort of folded his arms and looked into the camera and said, "And that is what we decided to tell you tonight." Gosh. You know, we're leaving the audience with the thought, well, what didn't they tell us? And that's what my immediate thoughts have been ever since Wednesday and this thing first started. First of all, is the context that we're not being told about, which is the French are a very reluctant partners of NATO. There's been a whole tradition since Charles de Gaulle, President de Gaulle, left NATO in 1966. Great, you know, very, very, you know, basically asserting France's independence. Mm. It was only 2009, I think, that under Sarkozy, around that time anyway, I'm not sure when they actually date that they joined, but France actually rejoined NATO. The NATO alliance, you know, was seen by the French in the 60s as something which was far, far too pro-American. And actually, you know, as we know, many of the former Nazis made their way over to the United States. We heard before Christmas 1,000 former SS people were given pensions by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the American Intelligence Services, and the French wanted to maintain their independence. They were also very suspicious about Britain joining the European Union, the old EEC at the time, saying, well, look, the Brits are just a Trojan horse for the Americans. So there's always been this kind of love-hate relationship with NATO. And with the CIA torture report that came out at the end of December, the French nationalist leader, Marine Le Pen, demanded that the French leave NATO again, saying, well, we want no part of this this torture organisation and the awful credibility that it gives to the Western alliance, and that it would send a very strong message to the Americans if they were to leave NATO, then they start behaving themselves, because of course the French and the Europeans are bearing the brunt of a lot of the problems that they've seen through the CIA torture program, and people who have been tortured by the CIA and places like Guantanamo Bay, where they have this thing called Strawberry Fields. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's a little camp, and a one called Penny Lane. Well, if people go into Strawberry Fields, they're going to stay there forever. But if they go into Penny Lane, they then get turned, that is to say, you know, persuaded by the American authorities to start working for them and sent out into the jihadi communities. So this is not the sort of thing that is going to go down well with the French. You've got, you know, massive Muslim population, a lot of Algerians in French, and a whole history of trouble with terrorism from Algeria and in Algeria. So this is, I think, the context for which we're not being told at all, which is that the French, just before Christmas, one of the main political leaders in France was suggesting, right, we've got to leave NATO. Well, that ain't going to be happening now if this sort of thing carries on. The whole message that's been sent to the French people is we really need to be part of the Western alliance. We're under threat from Islamic terrorism just like everybody else.
But the French politician you mentioned there, Le Pen, right-wing politician, I think most people know his name. Marine Le Pen. Know her name. She would have said that, but how important a comment would that have been? I mean, you suggest that this perhaps is a reaction in some way, which we'll come to in a minute.
Well, look, it's a vote winner, isn't it? I mean, many, many people are starting to question the relationship with the United States, especially around the time of when this torture program. I mean, it's quite clear that the US is leading some of the worst atrocities that have been going on in the world, whether it's in Afghanistan, in Iraq. The US government really has got an attitude, well, the world is ours, we are the police, we can just do what we want wherever we want. And that sort of thing is a serious vote winner in France. And the other parties don't have the courage to stand up to the Americans, but the nationalists do. And of course, you know, this is, you know, we've got, I think it's another couple of years before there's presidential elections again. But there are other elections in between times. And, you know, this is a real fear of the political classes that are pro-NATO is and pro the military alliance, as well as pro-big business and the EU, which is all aligned with all this kind of thing, that there might be a question of leaving NATO. That, I mean, basically, it's like the Hotel California NATO. Once you're in, that's it. You ain't leaving. And it's not real. Although it's put across as a kind of consensus organisation where all the various countries just get involved because they like it and because they think it's a good idea, it's turned from what was supposed to be a defensive treaty with the old Soviet Union being the threat, that the only articles in the treaty allow for defensive manoeuvres. Well, clearly, you know, going into Afghanistan, as we now know, it was not really a defensive movement at all. It was a geopolitical move and actually linked really to America's global ambitions to do things like, you know, get a foothold in Eurasia, which is quite close to Russia, you know, dividing even Russia and China, yeah. And, you know, getting their military forces in there. And, of course, the US have been putting their military forces out, using NATO as an excuse right around the world. And the French are saying, well, actually, we don't really want anything to do with this anymore. Many ordinary French people are. And that's why I think the timing of this is particularly significant. The other side aspect that we're not really being told about is, you know, this whole thing about free speech, and is it really a good idea to be publishing cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad? I mean, I don't actually personally find it funny to see a picture of Muhammad hung upside down or, you know, lampooned. I don't think there's any real humour in that. I mean, for me, satire comes from having a poke at the rich and powerful. I don't think Muhammad really comes into that category. Maybe the French police, the French, you know, and also, of course, people at the top of the clergy nowadays, you know, have a go at them by all means. But the idea that the entire faith and the basis for it is a topic for satire, I don't personally find that funny.
You've mentioned something in something that I read of yours, and that was, of course, that had that kind of satire been poked at the Jewish community, everybody would be up in arms.
Well, in fact, they were. Funnily enough, I was just looking at another Charlie Hebdo cartoonist from 2009, and he was actually not only sacked from Charlie Hebdo for taking the mickey out of Nicolas Sarkozy. What he said was, oh, Sarkozy wants to join Judaism to become Jewish in order for its financial benefits. Well, this is just a little bit of fun he was having. But as a result of that, he was sacked from the Charlie Hebdo magazine.
Gosh.
And not only that, he was also prosecuted by the French government for basically anti-Semitism, inciting racial hatred. So there's complete double standards when it comes to Muslims. And I also would say that, you know, any, if you talk to any, say, tabloid journalist here in Britain, they'll tell you that for the last 10 years, ever since 9/11, and possibly even before that too, that the Muslims have been scapegoated in an actually not a dissimilar way to the way the Jews were scapegoated by the Nazis in the 30s. And this is actually what the Charlie Hebdo magazine has been doing with these sort of cartoons is actually a kind of mild provocation. Obviously, it doesn't, you know, demand the sort of horrific massacre that we saw the other day. But the other side of all this is there were massive indications that there was going to be an attack on this particular place. Now, what on earth were the French security services doing? Well, they've got a couple of guys who were near the top of their, one of them particularly, right at the very top of their terror watch list, manages to get hold of automatic weapons, manages to get hold of ammunition. Who from? Well, if they manage to survive this siege today, then we might find that out. But the chances are, I don't think they will. So survive it. I mean, it sounds to me as if, you know, they may not. I mean, let's hope to God everyone does survive. But we will never know where they got guns from. They will never know, you know, anything about the handlers that they've had from whatever other support networks that they've had and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's another aspect of this that really worries me, is that the French secret services have completely fallen down. And let's look, you know, at what the British and other secret services have actually been involved with Islamic terrorists for decades. I mean, go back to Afghanistan. You've got Operation Cyclone for 10 years. The US and the British spent around about $4 billion in supporting Islamic terrorists to try and overthrow the Russians and harass the Russians in Afghanistan. Then also, you know, there was a revelation of the Islamic Fighting Group in Libya, where the British MI6 are paying millions of pounds, certainly high hundreds of thousands of pounds, to the Islamic terrorists to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi. That was all kept secret, but it came out when David Shaler and Annie Machon whistle blew back in the 1990s. I mean, this sort of stuff has been going on for a long, long time, and it's quite clear to me that most of the expertise of ISIS, and these guys, quite clearly, if you saw the film, you can see that these are ruthless killers. They look like they've killed before, that they may well have been trained actually by our own special forces, because our own special forces, the parachute regiment and people like the SAS, have been over in Turkey and Jordan actually training the and I actually spoke to one guy, I can't give his name, who's a former parachute regiment guy, who said that his friends had been over actually inside Syria doing training and helping jihadis, that this has been happening ever since 2011 when the uprising started in Syria. So we have been assisting these people in other parts of the world, and we're supposed to believe that now there was no assistance given by any Western intelligence services to these guys, whether it was training them, arming them, or anything. I think what's going on here is a tiny group of Western intelligence people, maybe even managed from one of these intelligence networks, places like Switzerland. There's a something called the Club de Bern, which is of retired intelligence people and right-wing intelligence people get together as part of that club, and are actually possibly even aiding, setting, you know, in other words, setting the ball rolling and getting something going, because in France, because the big fear of the rich and powerful is that NATO might start breaking up, and that can't be allowed to happen.
And as you suggested, that was the French nationalists who actually called for taking themselves away, for the French taking themselves away from NATO. And just a week before that, we saw some pretty significant right-wing demonstrations in Germany as well, didn't we?
Well, this is the backlash, I suppose, against the internationalism. I mean, I call it the United States of Europe. It seems to me that there's been something like that imposed on us. We've had having a currency imposed on us, which for most, I mean, I don't seem to remember a referendum in all of the countries saying, would you like a euro? No, we were just told. And it's been a poison chalice. I mean, look what's happening in Greece now. We've got a real backlash in Greece against the euro. They may be going back over to the drachma. There may be a default. There may be a crash. But, you know, all the time that the money people and the political power, rich and powerful political types, you know, that is at the EU, and the people that run the EU are not the MEPs we elect. They are the European Roundtable of Industrialists, who really call the shots at the European Commission, and none of the European Commission people are actually elected. They're all appointees.
That's right.
So, you know, what you've got is a sort of banking and political, and with NATO as well, military superstructure that over the last 70 years since the end of World War II has slowly been imposed on people. And there's very, very little that any of us can do to change things now. I mean, what we're voting for is basically loads of different aspects of different political parties, apart from possibly the nationalists. I mean, which is a horrible thing to have to be going back to nationalism, you know, because we all want to be getting on. But, you know, if we're going to be getting on across Europe in a way which is being imposed from the top down, rather than, you know, it happens naturally through agreement, I mean, that's just going to be a disaster, as far as I can see.
But of course, it serves the purpose of those who are conducting this this sort of rampant globalisation. I mean, the fact is that most people living in Europe now, it strikes me that there's a huge amount of hypocrisy. Well, guess what? You can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have open borders. You can't expect to have the kind of accessibility to cheap labour, cheap goods, cheap markets that we all have and that we all want, and not expect some kind of backlash from it.
No, there is going to be, yeah. I mean, the thing is also is you've got really no proper democracy either, and that actually, the idea that...
You mentioned Charles de Gaulle before. I mean, he's probably one of the last, really stand-up presidents, leaders in Europe, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and I mean, there have been one or two, and of course you see the similar thing in South America. There's been some very, like Hugo Chavez, people who are really quite obviously independent-minded and looking out for the interests of the people. But the trouble is, so much of our system now in so-called democracy runs on money and financial funding of political parties, that the ordinary folks never really get a look in. There's so many financial interests there and profit motives to be had by capturing the whole... I mean, look at the way, for example, that the oil industry is regulated. Answer is, it's not. It's just a cartel. We are told, and at the moment we've got fuel prices coming down, which is great, but that's only being done as a way of hitting the Russians to affect the Russian economy as a form of economic warfare. Yeah. So the bigger these big superstructures get, as we can see in the United States, in the United States of Europe, the bigger the entire kind of political organisation gets, the more corrupt they seem to get. So there's an absolutely correct justification for, sensible nationalism, not xenophobia, not hating of foreigners, and for sensible, rational arguments about why importing cheap labour may not be the best way to, run an economy, because it just plays into the hands of the bosses and forces down pay and conditions for workers, and let's have those sensible debates.
Yeah.
But most people, I think, are very much aware that there are some real big downsides to being part of the EU. But the thing that bothers me almost more than anything else in this is the quiet rise of fascism again in Europe. When you've got, particularly in Ukraine, the Pravý Sektor Party, which is not neo-Nazi, it is pro-Nazi, and Sloboda, which is neo-Nazi, as taking part in the government in Ukraine now, in Kiev, and also in Greece with the Golden Dawn pro-fascist party. Uh-huh. This kind of thing happens when you've got mass poverty, debt and austerity. People tend to sort of drift towards these more extreme elements. And that is the fault of Mario Draghi. That's the fault of the European Central Bank and the banking system, the banksters, who've done so incredibly well out of this so-called financial crisis, which is really just the biggest heist in history. I mean, the nearly £1 trillion in Britain was lent, supposedly, handed over. I mean, I wouldn't mind someone giving me £1 trillion or lending it to me, and then I'd probably have a bit of fun before I said, sorry, I can't pay it back. And I wonder if it ever will be paid back to the people to bail out the banking system. And, that is a heist, basically. That money has now been used to garner and gather more and more power to rich and powerful, essentially a criminal elite. And in the background to all of this, we've got heightening tension with Russia and a completely stalled and utterly failed, disgracefully failed, child sexual abuse inquiry in the Tory party, Whitehall and Westminster.
Yeah.
And that is almost the worst thing at the back of all of this, is the fact that we've got people being chased for parking fines like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
I've got my water company trying to get £2,000 off me because they failed to install a water meter. They promised they would, and they just didn't do it. And now they're saying, oh, well, so we want an extra £2,000 off of you. And that's I'm being pursued through the courts. But yet, people involved in the most horrific... I mean, children... Most people would be actually hesitate to even think about, smacking or hitting a child. It's a terrible thing to do. But actually sexually abusing them, murdering, children. This has been going on, it's quite clear now, for decades, and there's been no prosecutions. The people have been protected for political reasons, and it looks like the main force behind that has been political blackmail, so that our politicians can be easily blackmailed. So they've been dirtied up in one way or another. And the fact that we haven't dealt with that, to me, is, you know, the most horrific angle to all of this. We've got completely failed politics.
We're going to have to leave it there, but it's interesting because your last comments there about the disgraceful and failed child abuse inquiry is actually the first interview that I started this programme on, and I feel just as angry about it as you do, and it's great we've sort of come full circle, because lest we forget, all of these things are interlinked and we need to wake up and really
see
what's going on.
And of course the big reason for all the child abuse inquiry being stalled is that we've got a general election coming up.
Correct.
And many of the abusers, it seems, were Conservatives, and they don't, I mean, they're being the main party in power. You know, I'm just appalled that the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrat Party and other parties are not screaming about this. They just seem to be totally silent, and one wonders how on earth they can be kept silent. It seems to me most of the way the country is run is not through politicians anymore, but it's through the Daily Mail, the TV, the press, and what they can get away with.
That's right, and that's why we're thankful to people like you, Tony Gosling, who can actually open our eyes and allow us to look behind the news that we're given every day. Thank you so much for joining
us
again.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Bless you, thanks, bye.
Pippa Jones on TRE.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Great news, on the 3rd of September...